Welcome back to another episode of the Young Turks, another week of the Young Turks. Everybody is out except us, apparently. I'm Zadie Rola, joined by Mark Thompson once again.
Flattered. Everybody is out. And
well, all of the people who normally would be sitting here when that slide goes across are out. But the news continues, and thus the show will continue. The Edge podcast, available at edge-show.com.
Love you, John.
We were just talking about it. And so certainly take a look at that. Lots of big news to get to today, and it's shaping up to be a pretty big week as well, both in terms of some foreign policy stories that we're unfortunately not going to be able to get to on today's show. We'll follow up tomorrow. And then there's the possibility of some big domestic news. We're not going to go super in depth, but NBC News was talking about over the weekend that the news coming out of the Mueller investigation is that they might be closing in on General Flynn and his son. And that is about as much information as we have, so no point in going, you know, talking about it for 10 minutes or anything, but that certainly would be significant.
His son punching back on Twitter, and they removed his Twitter account as a result.
What is it? Oh, really? I didn't know that.
I don't know if it's still been removed, but it was for a time.
Shitty sons these days. Like, he does that, he loses his account, might end up in jail. Donald Trump Jr. Alludes to the fact that Hillary Clinton might have wanted to assassinate Donna Brazile on Twitter. That would have been huge news in a previous administration, that the son of the president. But you know what? We're going to move on. We're going to gloss over it. Because unfortunately, there's some other serious news coming out of this weekend, which we're going to start with. Yesterday, a gunman in Sutherland Springs, Texas, shot and killed 26 people in a church in what is now being called the largest mass shooting in state history, at least as of today. In addition to those 26 people who were tragically killed, approximately 20 others were injured. And then there's some other facts about the victims that is just heart-wrenching. The dead victims' ages range from 18 months to 77 years old. Obviously, any death is terrible, but I mean, a child, you know, a grandmother, which we're going to get to. In addition, First Baptist Church pastor Frank Pomeroy's 14-year-old daughter and all of his family's close friends were killed in the attack. As many people have pointed out, this is a very small community in Texas. And so a measurable percentage of the entire population of that town was killed in this attack. Now, that's something that even in our, you know, the modern day where we experience so many of these shootings on such a regular basis that I defy anyone to not be jaded at this point. I mean, that certainly stands out, that like the community is perhaps irreparably affected by this one act of extreme violence. Now, we have a little bit of information about the gunman. He was previously in the Air Force, but he was court-martialed and received a bad conduct discharge for allegedly assaulting his spouse and their child. That is an aspect of this story that the show will return to in the second hour, hosted by Hannah Cranston. But we do know that the shooting apparently ended. There was some period of time where he was in the church, had free range of the church, and then left the church. And a nearby citizen named Stephen Williford had apparently heard about the shooting, had gone there, shot the gunman, who dropped his gun, got in a car. They followed him, and he eventually took his own life at some point during that drive. So there's obviously a lot to get to in this, but I mean, we're just out of basically the time when people are talking about and thinking about Las Vegas. Many people had already basically moved on from that. And then you have this. You know, we can't go a month in this country without something cracking the top 10 or top 20. I mean, like Columbine, the big thing when I was growing up, the big shooting, it's not even in the top 10 anymore.
Yeah.
And two of the top 10 were in the past month.
Yeah, and it's a weird fact that we stack the bodies to rank these things in the top 10, you know, but that these mass shootings have become an epidemic in this country. And it's odd. Also, you'll remember in New York City, it was just last week that there was that van driver who drove over those pedestrians. And I saw, I think someone may have mentioned it to me, or maybe I saw a tweet saying if he'd had a gun instead of a vehicle, more
and
people.
And a fake gun that he had.
Like he had a fake gun, but had he had a real AR, you know, which is more people would be dead. And at the time, there was blowback, people saying, well, that's just, the anti-gun people are just bringing this up. Now, no, but it is a fact that the casualty rate that accompanies these kinds of attack with semi-automatic weapons is staggering. And then to your point about the children involved, I mean, you have sort of things that are symbolically reflective of innocence, church, children, and yet, while John says the community will feel these repercussions, it clearly will. Nothing happens. It doesn't bring on any changes. We saw it at Newtown. If that didn't bring change, nothing will. And I really think, and it's odd also that it happens in Texas, which, as you know, has very, very loose gun restrictions, virtually none. Texas is the place that certainly won't make any kind of changes to legislatively to this whole gun problem there.
Exactly, and we know that certain things, certain actions always come as a result of these sorts of attacks. People go out and buy more guns. The NRA benefits, the gun manufacturers benefit every single time there's a mass shooting like this. Their profits will go up 7%, 8%, you know, for the next month. They'll make a tidy little sum and then they'll move on. You know, they'll stop tweeting for 2 days. Those are the only actions that will come about even from a historic mass shooting in America. And you can feel it even in like the sorts of people that comment on these things on Twitter. You can feel it in the messaging that there's no hope anymore even. There's just, you know, yet again, this is happening. You know, the place changes, the number of victims might change slightly, but the reaction from politicians, everybody who could actually do something about this, will be identical every single time. And we know it. We know how it plays out for each sort. White shooter, you know, you start this script, the country plays it out for 24 hours, then it moves on. You know, Muslim extremist, you play out a slightly different script, maybe you ban a country from coming in. And then it's gotten so depressingly blasé in this country. That's why I tweeted yesterday that our apparent official position in this country when it comes to mass shootings is it's frowned upon. We don't like it, but we'll tolerate it and we'll move on as a people. We won't change anything, we won't give up anything for it. We will allow the craziest gun nuts in the country to continue to dictate what our policy will be in that area. Those people aren't generally gonna have to end up dying in these, innocent people. People like 18-month-year-olds, I don't think they owned a lot of guns. They're the victims in these events, but nothing can come about as a result of it because somebody really likes ARs.
Very well put. I mean, there is no change that will in fact, it's odd because you'll remember after Vegas, there seemed to be a change in the script. You had the NRA saying, well, we really should maybe examine, that was really like big rhetoric for them, examine those bump stocks and see about them and maybe some changes would make sense, right? The bump stocks, which none of us had heard of, or most, unless you were a real gun person.
I mean, heard of it, but not. Oh, it wasn't a common topic or anything.
Yeah,
like
in any case, I'd never heard of them. But that's the thing that changes a weapon to sort of be, in essence, an automatic weapon. But and you started to hear legislators say that same thing. Like maybe we should look at these bump stocks. We should get them out. And you thought to yourself, wow, it's small. I mean, really small. But maybe they really are going to address this now. What happened?
Yeah.
Died. It was orphaned by all of members of Congress, and ultimately by the NRA as well. Even the NRA that had initiated that conversation, or at least participated in that conversation, they left it alone as well. So you're right, John. Nothing happens. Rhetoric can change modestly, as it did, as I just mentioned, but ultimately no changes come about.
Yeah, I mean the inability to ban those. How pathetic is our country? Like we're supposed to be. Like one of the bad things about America is that we are so scared as a people of so many things and it leads to terrible policies. But you would at least think a side effect of our paralyzing fear would be that we'd want to protect ourselves. But not when it comes to guns, man. We couldn't ban bump stocks, a product whose sole purpose is to effectively break the law. We couldn't ban that. We couldn't ban armor-piercing bullets, which are designed to murder cops. If there was a bullet that specifically sought out and only killed those under the age of 6, the NRA would be like, let's pump the brakes just a little, we'll talk. What could you invent that they would have a problem with? I don't know if there's anything at this point because these people are out of their fucking minds.
Well, they view that slippery slope argument as the argument. So yes, they defend every single bit of ammunition, they defend every gun in the strongest way because they view that real estate as protected. So you're absolutely right. Makes no sense. Obviously, these semi-automatic weapons are designed to kill a lot of people at one time.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why they were designed.
Yeah, and exactly. And that's why they're chosen for these. I mean, the people who argue that, oh, well, if they didn't have assault rifles, they'd still be able to kill just as many people. Okay, then why do they keep fucking buying the assault rifles? Why don't they just get a pistol? It's way easier. You're less likely to raise the notice of the FBI and things like that. Why don't they just do that? And forget, they say you don't, like, you wouldn't even need guns. You could just get a knife. Okay, then why the fuck don't they do it with a knife? When was the last time somebody killed 59 people with a goddamn knife? It's never fucking happened. It's so fucking stupid. And the people, like, here, why don't we go through the list? All of the bullshit arguments that get brought back up every single time that, hey, Chicago's got a lot of gun regulations, but a lot of people die in Chicago. Yes, because the guns come from other areas like Indiana and Illinois that have lax gun laws in general. They're easily brought into Chicago. That's why you need a bigger, more broad ban on this. Fucking obviously. They'll say, you know, oh, church, you're generally a gun free zone. You know, an elementary school is a gun free zone. That's why the killers go there. In every case, they had a particular reason to go to the place that they went. This guy went apparently to murder his grandmother-in-law who was in the church. School shooters go to their school, but still the right wingers will say, well, they went there because there's no guns. No, people aren't randomly going to schools that they have no connection to shoot up. They go there because that's where they want to kill people. We have to have these stupid fucking bullshit arguments. We expend that slight bit of energy that we're willing to have as a country, and then we're spent and we move on and another shooting happens. And we will be back at this desk. Maybe it'll be me and you. Maybe Ben Mankiewicz will be here. And we'll break down another fucking shooting. We have to have another argument. I'm sorry that I'm going on so long.
I think you're absolutely right.
So Stephen Williford is the guy who heard about this shooting and went to shot him. Regardless of whatever actually happened there, that man is a hero. There's a debate about whether he actually stopped the shooting, since apparently the guy had already left, he was done. Maybe the guy was getting in his car to go somewhere and shoot somewhere else. There's no evidence of that, but it's possible. But regardless of any of that, this guy knew that he was going to a place where a guy was killing people and he chose to go, so that guy's a fucking hero. But what this event does not prove is that all you need is more people to have more guns. First of all, he didn't have an assault rifle, so apparently you don't need assault rifles to stop gunmen. And we know that the Mother Jones conducted analysis of 62 mass shootings and civilians were not able to stop it. In the few cases where civilians tried to step in, one of a couple of things happened. The civilian died, was killed, or was injured. We broke down the video of the guy that came upon a car hijacking. He pulled out his gun to try to help the guy and shot the victim in the head. That's the sort of shit that happens, but that's never gonna penetrate the skull of someone who has a financial interest in letting you have whatever fucking gun you want in whatever situation you want.
Well, it has penetrated the skull, but they just will not act on it. They're well aware that if everybody had a gun at these scenes, you'd have a lot more dead people. What would Vegas have been like if everybody had a gun? And oh, they God. Heard gunfire and it's ricocheting from everywhere. Everybody's got their gun out and they just start shooting.
What would the cops have done?
Exactly. Right. The cops don't know who's doing the shooting. It's absurd. This argument about if only the good guys would have the guns, then they could take out the bad guys. That's never cut for me. Never had any traction whatsoever. If you just think it out logically, it makes no sense.
Yeah. And even if, look, in this particular case, let's say he stopped more violence from happening. Let's say that the cops wouldn't have gotten there shortly thereafter. And again, regardless, the dude's a hero because he went in knowing that he could die. That is not in question. But let's give you that. So when they found out that this guy had shot him, a lot of the right wingers were triumphant because this is the only thing they're waiting for when it comes. They don't actually care if, you know, however many people end up dying. They just want to find out if they're off the hook on this particular one. Okay, so this guy goes in, shoots 26 people, a good Samaritan gets his rifle, perhaps a hunting rifle, sporting rifle, something like that, goes and shoots him and they're like, oh good. Oh yes, everything's going as planned. Only 26 people died. America's working perfectly with this solution to the problem. Their best case scenario leaves 26 people murdered in a church. And that's the best we can do? Is that making America great again? That we simply say, 26 could have been worse. Let's move on to the next one. But that is actually the position of untold numbers of right wingers online right now. That this is proof that their strategy works. That only 26 people were murdered in a small town church.
And yet, when there are people killed and Islam's involved, we run to safeguards. What can we do? How can we address this? The terrorist threat. I mean, that's the fear we're most comfortable with. When clearly domestic terrorism of this sort I mean, crazy terrorism is a far greater threat.
Yeah.
And yet there is no effort to make changes. No, I mean, and as John says, we talk about it over and over and over again, and you're sort of you're at a loss for a new angle, because the truth is it's obscene what's happening in this country. You know, I just came back from Europe, and in Europe, the guy was saying, go down here to, we're talking about a restaurant or something, and he said, it's kind of like a really dark area, but then the restaurant will be around. I said, isn't it scary? And he said, no, we don't have guns here like you guys do.
Yeah.
That's what he said. I mean, the world understands America is gun land. We are the United States of guns.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, with the gun-free zone thing, okay, the UK is almost entirely a gun-free zone. The right-winger's logic is, if you ban guns, then the only people who get guns are criminals, and then they run wild. Okay, then why in the UK aren't they running wild? Why doesn't every criminal get themselves a pistol? They know they'll be able to outfire the police and just go to the UK and run amok. They don't do that. Why do we learn nothing from the experience of these other places? It's incredibly frustrating. And then, of course, there's the other way that they try to get off the hook, where if somebody bought a gun that they, it would have been ideal if they hadn't been able to get it, then that would look bad for them. But if instead they just got it illegally, well, then gun control wouldn't have mattered anyway, because they broke the law. And so you saw spread all over the place online last night that this guy was actually banned from getting a gun, and so he bought them illegally. So gun control arguments don't actually apply. Turns out it's not actually true. He hadn't applied to buy a gun and been rejected. He applied to concealed carry and had been rejected. And apparently the newest information is that the Air Force didn't update a federal database with his domestic violence conviction. That they're saying in this article theoretically would have stopped him from buying a gun, but all the other information says that the particular classification of the domestic violence thing would have still allowed him to buy the gun anyway. Perhaps this is just a fucking distraction, maybe. Maybe it would be nice if you couldn't get denied for a permit and then go out and buy, you know, a military style assault rifle easily on the secondary market. Let's have fewer guns overall, legally and illegally, and make it as difficult as hell to perform this sort of act.
I mean, this guy fits every profile of somebody who shouldn't be allowed to buy these weapons, right? He has a history of domestic violence, so violence against both his wife and his child and animals, apparently, as well. He served time. He served a year. He got a dishonorable discharge. I mean, if ever there was a profile of somebody who shouldn't have an automatic weapon, by the way, he's had military training, too, so he knows how to maximize the casualties. I mean, this is the profile of someone who shouldn't have a gun, and the fact that he had all these guns and was able to do all this destruction. Again, I just think it's an obscenity.
Yeah, and if you're like, I know that pretty much everyone, and especially you watching this, you probably are, you've gone through this a lot. You probably have pretty strong feelings one way or the other about this issue. But just like, as a person, doesn't it bother you that the other side, whenever an event is happens like this, they're just looking to minimize any potential action? That they're relieved if they can somehow distract you to some other topic. Doesn't that bother you as a human? That they would pretend that they're the, it takes a fucking progressive atheist to try to protect people in a goddamn church in this country these days, because the actual Christians have been the conservative Christians have been so co-opted by the Republican Party that they think Jesus would have carried an RPG if it had been around at the time. Dude said turn the other cheek. He didn't say carry 24/7. He didn't say you should be packing when you go into the pews. That wasn't his position. Anyway, we're talking about having the same conversations over and over again. Let's have another one. So if you can ready video two. You knew that it was coming as soon as it turned out that the shooter in Sutherland Springs was a white guy. You knew where the conversation was gonna go. It only took a little bit of time, and then Donald Trump brought it there. Let's watch.
I think that mental health is your problem here. This was a very, based on preliminary reports, very deranged individual. A lot of problems over a long period of time. We have a lot of mental health problems in our country, as do other countries. But this isn't a guns situation. I mean, we could go into it, but it's a little bit soon to go into it. But fortunately, somebody else had a gun that was shooting in the opposite direction. Otherwise, it would have been as bad as it was. It would have been much worse. But this is a mental health problem at the highest level. It's a very, very sad event. These are great people and a very, very sad event. But that's the way I view it.
every single one of you could have scripted that out as soon as you saw the details about the shooting. It's not a guns thing, it's a mental health thing. It's always a mental health thing here. And you know, guns, let's just slow down a little bit. That same guy that you just saw in that video was talking about banning travel from the Middle East so fast that his advisors hadn't yet clued him into the idea that Uzbekistan isn't in the Middle East at that point. And then he wanted to shut down the entire diversity visa lottery program that night. Okay, but this is the dude who, like, let's not go crazy. I mean, this is just the worst year for mass shootings in US history, but let's not go crazy.
And you know, you can say, well, it doesn't really matter what Trump says, and certainly he says a lot of stuff where you really hope it doesn't matter. But here, because we are looking for, you know, he could make a real name for himself here in a good way. I mean, this is a guy who is just he's an abomination, right? But he could really do something. He said, yeah, we really have to examine this, and I'm going to call on congressional leadership. But he's wedded to the talking points. As John says, he knows what he has to say, and so he says it. And gets into this mental health jam. And yet, the truth is, the mental health thing wouldn't have kept this guy out of owning a gun in Texas.
Yeah, and I mean, you're right. This is actually an opportunity for him. I mean, like with all of the other interests, the big financial interests and all that he's tied in with, he doesn't need the NRA. And if he were to do something, he would at least make it give me a moment of pause. Like, oh my God, this dude banned these guns again. Like, oh, that would actually be a point in his favor. Maybe he's reasonable. He could try to do that. And you might say, well, his base would abandon him. And I think that prior to Trump, that's possible. Man, they love their guns. But they now believe that this is their dear leader. If he told them that assault weapons were bad, they'd be throwing them on a pile to burn the next day.
That's exactly right.
Use your cult for good for once.
Yes, it's that cult of personality. And John is right. He could sell a glass of water to a drowning man, this guy, when that drowning man is one of his base, you know. And it's true. And without even having to actually craft legislation, because of course he's on to the next thing, next photo op. But even just some empty rhetoric from Trump that wasn't off those NRA talking points would have been welcome. And by the way, I want to clarify something. When I talk about the mental health thing in relation to the shooter in Texas, what I'm talking about is his domestic violence, his dishonorable discharge. None of that would have put him in a category of being in a mental health situation that wouldn't still have allowed him to buy a gun.
Yeah.
I just want to be clear about that. So you can get away with a lot before they consider you mentally ill to the point that they won't allow you to buy a gun in Texas.
That's true. And look, we've been through this enough times. We know that bringing up the mental health thing is just a distraction to try to get you to not push for any actual change in the wake of a tragedy. There's no reason why we need to treat it seriously, this idea, but let's treat it seriously anyway, because we like to do that. If it is a mental health problem in this country, and you keep saying that over and over again, then why did this happen? Bring up this graphic. Why did earlier this year Trump sign a bill revoking Obama-era gun checks for people with mental illnesses? Like, we're not even at a point where I'm trying to get you to do something about the mental illness that you think is the problem. I'm trying to get you to stop taking away the little that we've done previously. You're moving in the wrong direction, Trump, if we are to believe that you're actually being honest, which we know probably isn't the case. That rule, by the way, if you don't remember this incident, added people receiving social security checks for mental illnesses and people deemed unfit to handle their own financial affairs to the National Background Check database. Now look, there's legitimate concerns over how exactly that would be used and you know who might fall under it. I understand that safeguards need to be in place, but that was like the one little step we took in the right direction. And he took that away. So don't give me any of that mental health problems. I'm not gonna go into dangerous territory there. I feel like if mental health is really the problem here, it's us, it's all of us as a country. We are fucked up in some particular way that stops us from protecting our own lives.
We've just become wedded to these ideals and so wedded that there's a whole and it's a substantial segment of the population that is falling in line with the talking points of the NRA. Yeah. And they have bought this sort of constitutional patriotism, which has been perverted. I mean, it's sort of like the Bible, you know, where you think, well, I guess there's some good stuff in there, and the best thing about the Bible is that I can reshape it and, you know, pop out a quote to justify anything I want. And that's the same thing that's happened with the constitutional rights on guns. And so as we sit here with these guns that were never could have been foreseen by the founding fathers, I mean, even if you accept the Constitution as a document that's not living and breathing, and of course it is a document that's living and breathing, that's why it's amended and changed and modified, you still have trouble squaring the document with what's going on now and the kinds of weapons that people are toting around.
Exactly. And again, like, I know a lot of conservatives across the country, like, people who are just, they feel like they're being fair, and they feel like, well, it's, what could it be? It's got to be the mental health. Okay, if it was mental health, if the guns are irrelevant, and it's just crazy people that would have done it anyway, then where are all of Britain's crazy people? And where are all the crazy people in Israel? And why is it that Europe is so goddamn free of crazy people? Why is it that you only seem to go crazy in America for some reason in a way that ends up with dozens of people being killed? That's weird. We should look into that at some point as a country. Isn't that bizarre that we're the only people that go crazy around the world? Maybe it's in our water. Maybe it's the stuff that's turning all the frogs gay. Maybe it also makes us go crazy. I don't know. I'll look into it.
Yeah, if you look at the formula, it's clear that the one variable in the formula is the ownership of guns. And look, you can be for the ownership of guns for a personal weapon for protection of your home or whatever, but you've got to concede that these automatic weapons or semi-automatic weapons that are then converted to effectively be automatic weapons, you've got to concede that they're not needed even to defend your home. I mean, I don't know what your home looks like, but when do you need to spray the whole place with 200 bullets? You just don't need to do it. It makes no sense. These things just don't square with the facts.
Yeah, and look, people who take home defense seriously know that you would never use something like an AR for home defense anyway, because the penetration means that it's likely to go through the walls of a house and kill either members of your family or innocent bystanders. That's why you use lower caliber weapons, things like shotguns possibly, because it's literally safer for your family in a home defense situation. Similar issues for hunting. Like, it's just BS. We all know, okay? You like them because they're cool. And I'll even grant you that. Like, I probably am more interested in guns than anyone else in this building. I think they're cool too, but I don't need to own one. And just admit it. It's because they're awesome, and understand the consequences of you feeling that they're awesome. Is that you think that it's okay for 30 or 40 or 50 people to routinely be gunned down because you want to be able to go, and think that that's cool, and that's fine. Maybe we're just living, you know, what a sick fucking country we live in. But I think lots of stuff is cool. I don't kill people for it, and me having access to it doesn't necessitate that other people need to die.
And the other people part of that, and this is where the shoe can pinch for everybody, it's not always the other people. Mm-hmm. You can end up, these people are at a church in Texas, probably a lot of them support gun owners' rights in that community. You can end up being a victim of it. All of us can end up being victims of this stuff. When you walk into you walk into a public place now in America, and you're going, where are the exits? Just in case, you know. I know it's taken away our innocence, and as John says, it makes absolutely no sense. It is just this, hey man, isn't this cool? I've got a gun. That's why you see people on Facebook with guns. That's why the video of people shooting with guns. It's this aura around gun ownership or having a gun or using a gun. But the truth is, there is no inoculation from gun violence. You can become a victim even as you support this constitutional right to own an AR.
Yeah, and the final point I'll make on this is something we were talking about in the wake of the New York attack. Where very often we need to find out what sort of attack it was so that we know exactly what the narrative coming out of it is. And we said after New York, there's something we can do that would help with both cases. When it's, you know, a crazy gun lover who looks much more like me than he does like Osama bin Laden, or if it's somebody who is pledged to ISIS, if we invest in some sort of effort here in America to try to detect and to stop radicalization of all kinds, that will help with all sorts of attacks. And not only is Trump not doing that, something that would be so easy to do and would be greeted with applause from liberals and conservatives, but he defunded the few organizations in this country that were doing that. He took away the grants to non-governmental organizations that were trying to stop people from being radicalized. Not only are we not doing anything to protect ourselves, but we are literally disarming ourselves against some of the highest profile threats that we've seen since Trump became president.
But quickly, a note, these mass shootings that we're talking about, probably have nothing to do with radicalization of any kind. These are deranged people, result of domestic dispute, angry at my girlfriend, wife, fill in the blank. Mm-hmm. We still don't really know what produced the Las Vegas anger and all of that carnage. So
that's true.
These are people who weren't even radicalized. This has nothing to do with Islam or religion, at least best as we can see. I mean, the only religious part of this latest carnage is that it happened in a church. Mm-hmm. So
we'll see. We'll have to see.
I think you identify, right, it's early in the process, but I think you identify something very important, which is, honestly, it all comes back down to we're awash in these weapons, and bad shit happens.
Yeah. Okay, with that, we're going to take our first break. A lot of other stuff in the news we have to get to. When we come back, another member of Trump's cabinet is in some potential legal trouble for things he just forgot to disclose while he was going through the Senate confirmation process. And then we're going to find out, what does the Republican think middle class means these days? You're going to be shocked to find out after this. Welcome back to the first hour of the Young Turks, everybody. John and Mark Thompson. We've got a couple of tweets I want to read about our first topics having to do with the unfortunate mass shooting in Texas. Taoist Hermit says, we can't talk about gun control legislation now. It's too close to the last three mass shootings.
Well said.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're at a point where, like, if you are like you're listening, you hear somebody talking about a mass shooting, you will have to ask questions to tell exactly which one they're talking about at any particular time. Art Murray with a good point says, targets of mass shootings have included young children and members of the US Congress, and no legislative action has been taken.
Exactly.
Yeah, we won't protect ourselves as a people. The legislators won't even protect themselves. Like, they're being targeted. That's a great point. And that's how bad it is that I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah, right.
They
exactly.
Shot up legislators.
Right, you're tripping over mass shootings on the way to talking about other mass shootings.
Yeah.
Because it's just, but they wanted to protect. You'll recall then that softball game. They wanted to, or at least discuss in the immediate aftermath, protect that area. How can we protect members of Congress? But wasn't gun to conversation. It was protection conversation.
Yeah.
It was, you know, let's get so. Yeah, the point is completely lost. The argument on gun legislation or even conversations had. Was no place in that conversation about the legislative, those legislators being shot up at that softball field.
I mean, it just, the answer is always going to be more guns, no matter what. I mean, however much protection they need, well, then the criminals will have access to buy bigger stuff, and then you'll need more. Like, the fantasy, the end state of this Republican ideology is everyone in America in full body armor, like Iron Man, just continually shooting at everyone they see. That's the only end point I can see for this. Hopefully we'll come to our senses before then. Anyway, we're going to jump back into the news now. We've got an interesting new wrinkle in the Donald Trump Jr. Trump Tower meeting story today, which is for some reason not getting a lot of coverage that I saw. And it has to do with Russian lawyer Natalia Veselnitskaya's recently saying that at that meeting, Don Trump Jr. hinted that he might be willing to push to change a major sanctions law targeting Russian oligarchs in exchange for damaging information about Hillary Clinton, which is significant. I mean, this getting rid of the Magnitsky Act, as we know, is one of the main policy goals that Vladimir Putin and his regime have in the United States. We know that at the meeting, that was one of the reasons that they sought out the meeting, was to talk about that issue, about adoptions, as if they care about the adoptions. And apparently, if she is to be believed, that is what they discussed. What she said, he said, was looking ahead, if we come to power, we can return to this issue and think what to do about it. I understand our side may have messed up, talking about, you know, passing it in the first place, but it'll take a long time to get to the bottom of it. So he's being coy. He's apparently as good of a negotiator as his father. Veselnitskaya also said Trump Jr. requested financial documents showing that money that allegedly evaded US taxes had gone to Clinton's campaign. She didn't have any and described the 20-minute meeting as a failure. She didn't have them, but after the last week, I don't doubt that they exist. Anyway, so if you don't remember this initial story, the meeting took place after British publicist Rob Goldstone contacted Trump Jr. on behalf of Veselnitskaya to request it, describing her as a Russian government lawyer who had information and documents that would incriminate Clinton, to which the president's son replied, this is Sorry, this is Goldstone. This is obviously very high level and sensitive information, but it's part of Russia and its government's support for Mr. Trump, to which the president's son replied, if it's what you say, I love it, especially later in the summer. And so he was fully aware of what the objective of that meeting was. They go, she says, we have this documentation. I don't have it right here, I can't give it to you. And here's what we want. And he says, maybe we can get that overturned if we get to power. I mean, I would say that the email by itself was glossed over, but with that, I don't know, there should be a term for that. Like if there's like foreign government and like you're like gonna give them stuff and then they give you stuff. Like especially with how much it's been in the news, could we have a term? Come on, America, we got like 50,000 words in this language. We can't come up with something.
Maybe anyway, quid pro quo would do it, or tit for tat.
Something like that. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of Latin. Let's get something shorter, but that's a good starting point. We okay. can do that. And then bear in mind again, and again, this was glossed over. When he says, if it's what you say, I love it, especially later in the summer, it wasn't like, and then the summer rolled around and we all got a nice tan. The summer rolled around. And tons of damaging information about Hillary Clinton got released. Weird that that happened on the schedule the president's son requested. So look, it's entirely possible at this point that Veselnitskaya is misremembering or purposefully lying. I have no reason to believe anything that she says about this. But it is interesting to note that whereas previously when she had come out and talked about the meeting, Donald Trump Jr.'s lawyer was quick to say that she was inaccurate or lying or whatever. But they're oddly quiet today. It's not like he didn't see this, and they're not talking about it. That is odd. I think that's worthy of talking.
I mean, it's not just drawn out of the universe, out of the ether, either. I mean, we know that the meeting happened, right? And now she's giving you a quote from that meeting. And as John says, I mean, it may not be right. That was the first thing I thought of too. Well, we try to be fair to these people who, you know, won't cut a break to anybody, but you still try to be fair to the facts. And of course, the facts are nobody's under oath here. We don't have any sort of independent corroboration of his comments, but his comments are consistent with what happened. And they seem as though they'd be consistent with the general ethic in the campaign and in the run-up to the general election.
Yeah, and look, I mean, again, we can't simply assume that she's speaking accurately. I mean, if the idea is that Russia's doing all of this, you know, in the election and outside of the election, having to do social movements and all that to disrupt America, at this point, lying about this in particular would probably advance that objective. In fact, if there had been no collusion, it's in Russia's interest to make us think that there was, because that would be disruptive. Man, we're in fucked up times. But that's where we're at, and we're trying to make the most of it. But yeah, and then you have to ask yourself, no, you can go past that. So yeah, so she's saying, you know, I was there by myself, but as they're pointing out, she's using talking points that have been shared with one of Vladimir Putin's legal hitmen, effectively. This is a metaphoric hitman, not like his real hitmen that kill
journalists and opposition
figures. For some reason, we gloss over that. But then you have to think, okay, so the Magnitsky Act, it hasn't actually been taken away. So, I mean, is he really giving what he said he would? It doesn't look like it. Okay, well, let's talk about sanctions then. We know that they passed a new round of sanctions on not just Russia, but on oligarchs in Russia. And those haven't gone into effect. Why is that? Because Donald Trump refuses to put them into effect. Weird. It seems consistent with wanting to provide some sort of payback to people who might have helped you.
Right.
Or if not, he's willing to do something extremely suspicious that would lead us to believe he's paying them back. And for what reason? No one could come up with any other reason he would be acting the way he is other than that he is paying someone back.
Yeah, if it walks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, it's a duck. I mean, it does look as though Donald Trump and his administration are extending themselves majorly to the Russians. And that's taking the form of not enforcing the sanctions, which is remarkable to me. I mean, to me, that's about as naked. Even if this isn't legit, you'd think you wouldn't want to create the impression that you have a relationship with Russia that's too cozy. But
yeah, it was passed by Republicans.
This is the most naked example of there being some kind of, and then as we'll get to, there are relationships, as it turns out, within his administration and the Russians.
Well, why don't we turn to that? Because we've got some more shady business to discover. or to talk about. Newly discovered financial documents have revealed that the Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross apparently hid business ties to members of Russian President Vladimir Putin's inner circle during his Senate confirmation process. Now, this sort of failure to disclose information was very common for a number of people during that process. There's something about going before the Senate that just flusters you, and you forget about these businesses you own and meetings you had with ambassadors. Weird how that works out. But let's talk about these documents. The details of Ross's financial holdings were revealed in a trove of more than 7 million internal documents of Appleby, a Bermuda-based law firm that was leaked to a German newspaper that I am not going to attempt to pronounce. Some of those documents were then provided to NBC News by ICIJ, an organization that calls them the Paradise Papers, obviously a reference to the Panama Papers. Those were then analyzed and these connections were found. Well, let's break down what those are. Ross's investment firm has a 31.5% stake in Navigator, a British company that charters ships to help energy companies move their materials around the world. One of Navigator's top clients is the Russian energy giant Cyber, whose owners include Gennady Timchenko, Putin's friend and judo partner, who is sanctioned by the United States, and Putin's son-in-law as well. Okay, so he has an investment firm. It has a 31% stake in this company, and they do dealings with the sons and martial arts partners of Vladimir Putin. Okay, so that's the connection, I guess. Well, let's talk a little bit more about this. According to Navigator's SEC filings from this year, Cyber wasn't just a client of them, it was one of their top five clients. Back in 2016, that company alone brought them $23.2 million and $28.7 million thus far this year. Now, he has responded to these allegations saying that claims that he didn't properly disclose the ties were, quote, totally incorrect, and called the media's reporting of it, quote, just an example of the press trying to find anything they can, however remote or silly, to attack the president and somehow link him to Russia. He went on to say that it was disclosed on the Form 278, which is the financial disclosure form, in my case, three times, which, if it was true, would be strong evidence in support of what he said. However, he did not disclose those things on the document. He is simply lying to you.
Yeah, this is extraordinary, because here's a guy who's in charge of implementing the Russian sanctions, for example, right? And he has this strong relationship that he, financial relationship that he continues to maintain, despite the fact that he knows he's going to have to be dealing with Russia in no small capacity in relation to these sanctions. This is just, if it were just the only thing going on in this administration, it would be extraordinary. But it's unethical. I don't know that it's illegal yet. I guess that's going to be explored. But the lack of ethics in this administration.
Lubenthal wants to look into it, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, across the board, there just seem to be no ethical underpinnings. This is extraordinary. I mean, absolutely extraordinary. If you were a reporter on CNBC or something, one of the financial news network, you have to divest yourself of all stocks and equities, and I think maybe they make you put them in a blind trust, but yeah, because you're reporting on stuff that will affect the markets, right? So we demand more of journalists who are reporting on business than we do of our leaders in Capitol Hill. I mean, it's insanity.
That's a great point. We demand more of those people, most of whom are just fake news, but we still expect them to live up to a higher standard.
We've talked about the last thing I was just going to say. We've talked about the conflicts of interest that run ripe over this administration, from the president Donald Trump all the way down through his cabinet, et cetera, and through Jared and through Ivanka and all the rest. So this is just one more plank in this ridiculous boardwalk of trouble that they, at least ethically, that they've laid out.
Yeah, no, exactly. And forget Russia. Forget that this might have any connection to the campaign. Forget all of that. It's a financial conflict of interest that he decided the Senate didn't need to know about. And I remember back when we were covering all of these Senate confirmation hearings, and we covered them super in depth, so much so that lots of people got bored, and I understand why. But the reason we were doing it is because we knew that there was going to be so much shady, corrupt shit, that they were going to try to make as much money for themselves, that Trump was going to install people that would allow him to loot the US Treasury. And it keeps coming up that people forgot all sorts of stuff. I mean, he forgets this connection that might have made him millions of dollars. Jared forgets multiple companies he owns when he's talking to these groups. It's amazing how their minds just on, they just shut off. They just blank out for just a second. So even if you don't care about the Russia stuff, I mean, this is the Commerce Secretary, a man who has direct ability to shape policy and implementation of policy in a way that both benefits him and potentially benefits or hurts US corporations and individuals. I mean, this is the sort of corruption that we knew would come with Trump, but they're so brazen with it, and we need to do something. We need to take this guy out, just like happened to Price.
Yeah, that's the thing. This, all the corruption in Washington usually is in the back door. This is right in the front door. And the fact that he would accept this one thing, like that he would leave out this one thing, I think speaks volumes. By the way,
sorry, I'm a child.
The amount of, what's that? What?
Never mind. That is a very good point. They're just incompetent. Like they're definitely bad at being corrupt. And Trump's been doing it for decades, and he still sucks at it.
Well, here's the reason, I think, or one reason. I'd love to hear what other people have to say, but the fact is, these are super rich guys. I mean, Wilbur is.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, these are.
He's a billionaire.
And billionaires are used to doing what they want.
Yeah.
And so I think these guys are not used to having to sort of play between the lines. They've never had to play between the lines before.
Yeah. Yeah, honestly, I feel like I know that the Senate is going to want to look into this. They want to talk to Sessions some more and all of that. But I mean, I feel like with enough examples like this, it's time to institute a Senate. We need like extreme vetting for all of the people that made it through the Senate already. Let's go back through, make sure that everything's been mentioned. Oh, here's, you know, a $500 million loan I forgot about initially. You know, just let's get it all out in the open. Anyway, we do have to go to our second break. When we come back, we've got an update on the Republican tax bill and their efforts to convince you that it's not going to screw you over and enrich the rich across this country. We'll have that for you when we come back from this break. Welcome back to the Young Turks, John Iadarola and Mark Thompson. For some reason, my Twitter is not updating on here, so let's jump right to member shout outs. I want to recognize two of our great members, Keith Borman, thank you for supporting TYT, and Amy Perlman. Thank you to both of you for allowing us to do what we do. Probably have time for one more story, so let's talk taxes for a bit. It's the second week of the Republican rollout of a new tax plan, and as we told you last week, even before it was revealed, it was wildly unpopular, even less popular than Donald Trump actually, which takes some doing these days. I believe it was about 32%. It's even worse now, and there's a few reasons for that. I mean, people can see through the propaganda, they know that this is largely a giveaway, mainly to corporations, but also to the wealthy. They do quite well. I think 60% of Americans said that this favors the wealthy, which makes me wonder what the other 40% saw when they read it. This looks like nothing to me.
Yeah, they didn't read it.
I don't know.
Is the truth of it.
But anyway, the Republicans are going to have some other problems too, because they are really having to stretch the meaning of words to get people on board with this. And a great example of that is the term middle class. So let's bring up this graphic. This is like a talking points sheet to get people hyped up. And you see there, one of the things they talk about is a benefit for individuals and families. They say that this plan lowers individual tax rates for low and middle income Americans. Hey, that's good. And then they give the tax brackets to 0, 12, 25, and 35. And so they say we keep the highest one the same, which isn't technically true. They totally change how many people qualify for that. But they do drop down that 35 from 39, and they include it in the low and middle income categories, which is interesting because to qualify for that, you have to make more than $450,000, which would put you in the top 0.5% of all individual Americans. Which isn't just money, that's money where you can like look down on the bottom half of the 1%, those broke bastards. Like that is FU money, that's what that is. But don't worry, that's low and middle income. Man, I am destitute by their, by their standards. I can't afford to sit at this desk, I think. Who let me in here? The median household income, if you must know, is $59,039. It's nowhere near $450,000.
No, most people will never see $450,000 as an annual income ever. I mean, again,
no.
you have the statistics. I mean, you know, 99.5% won't see it. So
yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, and like that's why, man, the people, the Democrats fighting this, they've got to use this stuff. Like, because it's just sort of in our DNA as a country that we're aspirational. We've convinced ourselves that we have this American dream, and if we work hard and study and save, we too can be wealthy. Hasn't been true in like 70 years, but we still believe it. We still think it's possible. Okay, so you can get a lot of vague language it'll slide over the armor of our American dream. But specifics are hard to argue with. And you can like convince a guy that he's middle class who isn't middle class, but you can't convince him that he makes $450,000 a year if he doesn't. He knows the difference between his salary and that. I certainly do. I don't think this is a winning strategy for them at this point.
No, and you know, you're right. We're distracted by a lot of the Russia conversation, and there is sort of some fresh meat served up all the time on that. Mm-hmm. Indictments and more rumors of indictments, and it does take us off the trail because this should be front and center. I mean, it's a real mm-hmm. money grab. Yeah. And as John says, the facts don't support this kind of tax plan. Mm-hmm. It's really just a tax cut. But we don't hear enough about it. We need to do more with this. I mean, opposition needs to play this card in a bigger way.
Yeah, I think so too. And last Friday, we broke down the likelihood that the entire thing could crumble because of how aggressively greedy they're being. That their desire to not just cut corporate taxes down by 5% or 8%, which would be huge for those corporations. They would make so much more money. But the need to cut it effectively in half means that they're going to drive up the deficit so much that they might not be able to pass the entire thing because of the Byrd rule. Like they're so brazen in this area, and it's amazing at this point. We're not 1 month into this new power structure that we have as a country. The incompetence month after month, and they still think, nah, we got this. We can get everything when it comes to taxes. It might be the end for them. But we do still have to, as you say, keep on it, because if this sort of thing passes, it's not just a disaster now. It will be a disaster for the next 5 or 10 years. We'll have to cover on this program, because you know, when you start racking on trillions more dollars in deficits per year, think of all the social programs that are going to have to be cut. They're going to justifiably be cut just to be fiscally responsible. You know, all the big progressive priorities. We can forget about the aspirational stuff. Even keeping what we have now will be impossible in many cases if this sort of tax plan actually goes through.
Yeah, this is the fact that it is going to be a deficit maker may be our only hope for it not passing.
Exactly.
So as John says, I mean, that oddly may be the saving grace of this, because apart from that, you know, it's likely that they'll push it through, and they don't care if it's got popular support. You know, this is a very clever crew.
Yeah.
This administration and this GOP leadership, which is now in bed with the administration because they see the cult of personality around their guy, Trump, they don't need to sell it because they've got their cadre, which is just the GOP in Congress and, of course, in the White House, and they're going to push through whatever, and the messaging they'll leave to Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And as you say, that middle class messaging, I mean, it'll be spoon fed to his followers, and they'll regurgitate it until they realize, wait a minute.
Yeah.
$450,000. That's why that has to get out there. They out message us every step of the way.
Between us and that at the middle, what is that in the middle of? That's like between me and Scrooge McDuck or something like that. I think they've been watching too many cartoons. But you're right, they don't care that it's not popular. They don't even seem to accept that it's not popular. I mean, multiple congressmen were saying things like, those aren't my constituents that have it polling at 25%. Or one said, is that one of those polls that only talks to 1,000 or 2,000 people? Yeah, it's one of those, because that's what polling is. People are amazing in this country. Anyway, we're going to have to end the first hour. I wish that we could go on. We wanted to talk about the renewed tensions between Saudi Arabia and Yemen over the weekend. A little bit of homework. You don't necessarily need to know all the details of the ballistic missiles fired and all that. But look up the rising tensions, not between those two countries, but Saudi Arabia and Iran. We're going to talk about that, I hope, on tomorrow's show.
Yeah, that could be a flashpoint in the Middle East. It could be gargantuan.
I mean, thousands of people have died in Yemen already. Tens of thousands have been injured. But that will look like nothing if Saudi Arabia and Iran go to war. So anyway, we do have to end the first hour. Thank you, Mark,
thanks,
for joining me. And we'll be back with another hour after this.